Hey, I'm golf broadcaster Matt Adams. The updated and expanded second edition of my book, The Golf Round I'll Never Forget, Golf's Biggest Stars Recall Their Finest Moments, is now available. Readers can expect to march with Arnie's Army at the 1960 U.S. Open, relive Jack Nicklaus's remarkable 1986 Masters win, and be amazed by the Tiger Slam. The Golf Round I'll Never Forget, Golf's Biggest Stars Recall Their Finest Moments. Pick it up where fine books are sold, including BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon.com.
The NFL's roots and its Pro Football Hall of Fame are in Canton, Ohio. And today we have George Bozica, who grew up in the shadows of the Pro Football Hall of Fame and in the Canton area. And he's here to talk about Canton and the Pro Football Research Association coming up next. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes at PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome to this bonus edition of the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, because today we are going to talk about the Professional Football Research Association and a convention they have coming up. You've heard our commercials that we've been playing for the PFRA that has a convention on June 24th to June 27th of 2021 coming up. And we have one of the organizers of the convention as our guest in this episode, George Bozica. He is the assistant executive director of the PFRA, a man that has literally grown up in the shadow of the Hall of Fame in Canton. George Bozica, welcome to the Pigpen.
Thanks. Thank you. Well, glad to be aboard.
Well, we are certainly glad to have you. First of all, if you could, just for the listener that maybe isn't totally familiar with the PFRA, if you could just describe, you know, a little bit about what the PFRA is.
Yeah, the PFRA is the Professional Football Research Association. We've been in existence since 1979. It was actually founded in Canton at the Hall of Fame at that time. And it's basically an organization of researchers, authors, football experts. And the purpose of the organization is to preserve and research the history of the game and then disseminate, you know, that research and basically also an accurate, basically, history of the game. And we feel that that's very important culturally and just intellectually, because sometimes it's interesting. People seem to know the history of the game Super Bowl on, but some people don't necessarily know the history of the game before the Super Bowl. So it's good to put everything together, you know, and going back the 100 years of the game. So that's what we're all about.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I mean, just to point out, you're not just NFL centric. You're sort of all pro football that happened in the United States, correct?
That's correct. Yeah. We actually have a committee on the World Football League. Sometimes we have some research on the USFL. So yeah, anything that deals with, pro football in the United States is fair game. And actually we've even had some articles in our publication on the Canadian League. So, I mean, yeah. And actually, interestingly, and I know we're going to talk about this a little bit, but we actually have some members even overseas. One of the speakers at one of our recent conventions actually is a pro football coach of a team in Italy. So we have, you know, sort of international membership, I guess I should say.
It's just amazing how it's sprouting up around the entire globe, especially, you know, the NFL, but all football everywhere. They have pro leagues in almost all countries around the world. It's unbelievable.
It really is. It's amazing when you think about it, because, I mean, that's obviously it's become sort of our national pastime in a way. I think somebody said recently that it's even more popular than baseball, but it's amazing how it's just a worldwide thing anymore. It just amazes me.
It most certainly is. Now, how did you get connected with the PFRA? What was your interest level that took you in becoming the assistant executive director?
You know, I think it sort of started, I was just Googling and I found the organization. I thought, well, this sounds like a pretty good match for me. I grew up in Canton. Actually, I literally grew up within walking distance of the Hall of Fame.
Wow.
The street that we live on, which is on the northwest side of Canton, we're sort of up on a hill. And the Hall of Fame is in a park in Canton called Stadium Park, because it used to be Stadium Park because of – I don't know how many of your listeners remember Fawcett Stadium, which is where they have the Hall of Fame game every year. And until just the last couple of years, they always had the enshrinement there also. Now, obviously, with the new Hall of Fame Village, which I'm sure we're going to get into a little bit, they built a new stadium. But you could actually see the tip of the Hall of Fame from our house. And actually during Hall of Fame week, if I wasn't attending the game with my dad, you could hear the PA in our neighborhood. That's how loud it was. So that's how close I was to the Hall of Fame. So I've always had, obviously, an affinity for pro football. I Googled it and found out about the PFRA. It was right around the time I'm sort of semi-retired right now. I was an attorney for 30 years, and I retired from that back in 2009. And it was right around then that I started getting really active. I'd been sort of a member, but I started getting really active. And a few years after that, I was asked to be assistant executive director, and I accepted, and the rest is sort of history.
Well, that is incredible. I mean, not only the PFRA connection, but, you know, living in being able to see the top of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Now, I assume you were able to visit it quite a bit growing up.
Yeah. You know, it was always sort of funny when I was growing up in the 60s, because I remember starting to go to the Hall of Fame festival with my dad around 64. Because I remember he took me to the Hall of Fame game that year, which was the Colts and the Steelers. And that was my first NFL game of any kind. I was 8 years old. And I remember just, you know, that weekend every year, you know, I mean, it was just, you know, amazing. But, you know, I mean, we had sort of our regular thing every year. We would, you know, get up, go down to the parade, because you always had everything. Years ago, everything happened on Saturday of the Hall of Fame weekend. On Friday, they would have like a mayor's breakfast, and then they would have a fashion show for the women in the community. And then in the evening, they would have the big enshrinees dinner. It's really changed over the years. And then on Saturday, that was the big day. You started with the parade first thing in the morning. We would go down and sit on the parade route at 5 a.m. And then you had the enshrinement right after that. And then after that, you had the Hall of Fame game. And since we live so close, everybody that was a relative or a friend, my mom always had a picnic in the backyard, you know, but we would go and come the whole day, go to the parade, come home, eat lunch, go to the enshrinement, come home, go back for the game. So it was just a lot of fun. I mean, there was actually an electricity in the air those weekends, which I still sense now, because obviously I still go, even though I live in Akron about 20 miles up the road, we still go down, you know, there's just such an electricity. And, you know, and it has changed over the years too. I mean, I remember the old days. I mean, everything was on the steps of the Hall of Fame. You know, you had the parade, and then the parade came right up to the Hall of Fame. And then the enshrinement was right on the steps of the Hall of Fame. And I actually sort of like that better. There was something to me significant about seeing the enshrinees there, and then knowing that they sort of played off the idea that they were going to then enter the hall. And it was usually right in front of the door. So I always thought that was significant. And then you would go next door to Fawcett Stadium and then see the game. But I always liked that. I mean, I remember, you know, it was a big thing in Canton. You know, Pete Rozelle would be in town every week, you know, and he would always be the last speaker for the enshrinement. And I remember one year Gerald Ford was in town when he was vice president and he spoke. I remember one other year when Nixon was president, he was in town for the enshrinee dinner. And I remember we drove downtown because we didn't go to the dinner, but I remember driving downtown because we wanted to see if we could catch an eye of, you know, a look of him. But, you know, there was, you know, his motorcade and everything else, so you really couldn't see him. But yeah, that's it. It was a big weekend then, and it's still a big weekend. It's just amazing for the whole area.
Well, I guess tell us a little bit about, you know, for those of us that have never been to you know, the enshrinement. You're talking about the parades in the 60s and the early 70s. Now, what happened at the parades? Did they like have the enshrinees of that year in the parade, and maybe some gentlemen have already been in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, what they do every year, and it started back, you know, at the very beginning, is that they have a parade through town. It's always on Saturday morning, and they start in downtown Canton, and they've changed the route over the years, but basically it's all the enshrinees with their presenters riding the parade, and they basically space them out throughout the parade. So if you have like 8 enshrinees, they would be spaced out throughout the parade. Then you have your usual bands and floats and everything else. And then, yes, the former Hall of Famers would come to town, and usually throughout the parade, they would be interspersed, and they would usually ride in grouping. So, you know, you could see, you know, people that had been enshrined before. And then you know, whatever celebrities were in the area, they would usually be invited to be in the parade. I remember one year Ernest Borgnine was in the parade because he had just played Vince Lombardi on TV. So, you know, yeah, I think one year, years and years ago, Pat O'Brien, who played Newt Rockne back in the 40s, and Newt Rockne All-American, he was in the parade. So, you know, they tried to get celebrities, obviously, that had some, you know, tie-in to football. But I remember one year Robert Goulet was in town. So he was in the parade. So it was just, you know, it was sort of pick and choose. You never knew who you were going to see in the parade. Red Fox. I don't know if people remember Sanford and Son.
Oh, yeah. But
I remember Red Fox was in the parade one year. So it was a fun time. You know, it just depended on celebrities that were close by or in the area there, or that, you know, had an affinity for pro football. So it was always fun.
I can just picture Red Fox saying, "Elizabeth, I'm going to the Hall of Fame parade."
Yeah,
oh, that had to be something special. Now, yeah. I mean, those had to be some great memories. But something else that intrigued me, what you said, is you said your first game that you remember is you went to the Colts and the Steelers Hall of Fame game at Fawcett Stadium in 1964. So I assume Johnny Unitas and the gang were all playing.
Yeah. Yeah, they were still playing. Yeah, Johnny Unitas, Raymond Berry, that whole group, Lenny Moore. Yeah, they were all still playing. And that was at a time when, you know, actually, I'll be honest, 8 years old, I remember about a year ago, I said, you know, I remember being at the game. I remember sitting with my dad, and I remember there being a lot of people in the stadium because my dad would take me to high school games because in Starr County, which is Canton, is the county seat of Starr County. And Starr County is huge high school football area in Ohio. I mean, I know you being from, you know, from Pennsylvania and everything, you understand the affinity for this whole area for high school football. Mm-hmm. But with Maslin, who I know everybody's heard of Maslin, and Canton McKinley, a huge rivalry game every year. You know, that was a big thing, but I remember being at the game, but I wanted to go back and see what was, and I knew that the Colts just annihilated the Steelers that day, but I wanted to remember like who played and how they played. So I looked up the box score and I found that, you know, Unitas threw, I think, a couple of touchdown passes and for over 200 yards. So it isn't like today where, you know, those guys hardly play in exhibition games. You know, back then, you know, they actually played in the exhibition games. So yeah, all those guys, because I still have the program. I actually am on I collect programs. I'm on a thing right now where I'm trying to collect every Hall of Fame program for every year. And wow. I think I'm up to about 2001 right now. So I'm getting there. But yeah, I remember the game. I remember being there and just thinking about, you know, just the, you know, and there was only 20,000 people. I mean, plus the stadium wasn't a huge stadium, but I mean, it is for high school. And that's what it was basically. But yeah, I do remember. And actually, you asked a question earlier and I forgot about going to the Hall of Fame. I remember growing up as a kid, every boy's birthday party that I went to for a number of years was at the Hall of Fame. So I remember going to Hall of Fame like at least three times, like in like a couple of years. And I remember one of my friends said, "Oh, I've been here 10 times and somebody else had been there 5 times." Just depending on whose birthday party you were invited to. Everybody went to the Hall of Fame. So it's sort of funny.
So while the rest of us were going to bowling birthday parties and skating and maybe a Chuck E. Cheese or two, you were going to the cool place, the Hall of Fame. That is pretty great.
Yeah.
Wow, that is really nice. Now, is there any particular fond memories that you have? I mean, I assume you went to more than just the Colts Steelers game in 64. Is there any like particular teams or players or maybe a specific play from those Hall of Fame games that you could share with us?
Not so much. I think the big thing was the thing that I remember was seeing the old timers. I remember like seeing like Bob Waterfield riding the parade, and he was married to Jane Russell then, who was a famous movie actress. And I didn't really know who Jane Russell was. I was like a 10-year-old kid at the time. I remember my dad said, "Well, that's Jane Russell." And I said, "Who's Jane Russell?"
You know? She was on every calendar and every mechanic's garage, I think, you know.
She was. So, you know, so I distinctly remember Jim Brown riding in the parade when he was inducted. And I remember being so impressed by his build. I mean, he was wearing this was obviously when he was inducted. It was during his Hollywood years. Mm-hmm. He was wearing, as I recall, some type of jumpsuit, and it was bursting at the seams. I mean, you could see the power in those legs because they were bursting from that jumpsuit he had on. So much from those. I remember like seeing certain people, you know, riding in the parade and seeing them inducted, you know, on the steps of the Hall of Fame. Those are my most, you know, distinct memories.
Now, did you ever get to meet any of the players, or, you know, shake their hand, or, you know, get a photo op with them?
Not so much. No, it was sort of the security around the Hall of Fame was always sort of tight. I do remember one year the players were on strike, and I remember some of the players were outside the one gate at the Hall of Fame. We didn't go into the game because my dad and my uncle were both, one was a steel worker and the other one worked in a factory too. So they weren't going to cross a picket line. And yeah. But the players were like, you know, we're outside, and they were just there to tell fans what the strike was all about, to try to, you know, I don't know if they would do that today so much, but you know, they were, you know, it was a different time. Again, it was a number of years ago, and they were just trying to explain to people, the fans that were outside, you know, well, this is what we're striking for. And, you know, just trying to explain to fans what it was all about. And I can't remember specific players, but I do remember that.
Oh, I mean, that is really cool, though, too. I know living in Erie, we're 100 miles away from Buffalo, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh. We're sort of in the middle of that triangle. Mm-hmm. And we used to have the rookie preseason game between the Buffalo Bills and the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was in my hometown of Edinburgh, which mm-hmm. is about 15 miles south of Erie. And we would get to see, you know, just mainly the rookies were playing, but a lot of the veterans would show up. And I can remember, you know, in the early 90s, you know, Bruce Smith of the Bills, I got the, you know, walk past him, and I couldn't believe how large that man was. You know, it's see these players up close. It's just unbelievable. When you're talking about Jim Brown, I can't even imagine. So that is definitely some great memories. Now, over the years, now you talked a little bit about the Hall of Fame, you know, having the enshrinement right on the steps, you know, right in the picture, right in front of that football shaped entrance, you know, going in there, which is magnificent. What else has really changed with the Hall of Fame itself that you remember over the years?
I guess a number of things. I mean, obviously they've sort of changed the configuration of the enshrinement, whereas it used to be billed as football's greatest weekend, and it usually was like Friday, you know, Saturday, and then I think they always had some kind of activity for the players on Sunday. But you know, that was how it was billed through, you know, that first decade or so, and then I remember obviously it started to expand over sort of a 2-week period. They started doing like a kickoff parade. It wasn't the grand parade, but it was like a little kickoff community parade. And then they started adding more activities. You know, now they have a variety of different things that are more, you know, hands-on. You know, obviously if you want to spend the money to go to certain things, you know, they have like, and they've spread things out. I think now, I mean, last couple of years, I think the Hall of Fame game has actually been one of the first activities. And then they have the parade, and then they have the enshrinement now on Saturday night. So they've sort of changed the configuration of those. You know, every year they seem to change that a little bit. Obviously, the Hall of Fame has expanded. You know, I mean, it used to be that you just had, you know, the so-called rotunda and then the first Hall of Fame area. And now they've expanded that all the way back. They built the research center, which is new. They're now building the Hall of Fame Village, which has sort of taken over that whole neighborhood where the Hall of Fame is. They built a new stadium, Benson Stadium, a couple of years ago. And that's, you know, the state-of-the-art stadium, you know, in Little Canton, Ohio. I think that it's just the growth of the Hall of Fame over the years. And when you go in, you know, the different exhibits that they have now, you know, I remember when it was a sort of a small Hall of Fame, like early on, which, because you didn't have that many members. And now, you know, every year, and they it's interesting to me because they've changed the way they exhibit the players' bus over the years. You know, that's been different. So I guess it's just the growth, and then moving the enshrinement into the stadium, which is now, I love the simplicity of the old days, but now it's more of an extravaganza, you know, mm-hmm. and I guess that's what football has become with the Super Bowl and everything else. Pro football has become an extravaganza, but I do long for some of those older, you know, simpler days when you just went to the steps and, you know, I remember they would have folding chairs set up in front of the Hall of Fame, and that's where everybody sat, you know, and the players' families would be there. And I remember a local radio personality at Canton's sort of main radio station, where my son actually works now, WHBC, their sports guy was always the master of ceremonies at the Hall of Fame. And so it just shows you how it's changed when, you know, recently, you know, Chris Berman's been, you know, the master of ceremonies. So now it's become more of a national thing. You know, back in the day, you didn't see a lot of fans sitting in the audience with their paraphernalia on and stuff like that. Now you go to the enshrinement and there's fan sections. You know, if an Eagle is a couple of years ago, I can't remember the player's name now, I'm drawing a blank, but a former Philadelphia Eagle was inducted. So you had a whole section of nothing but green, you know, or, you know, just that sort of amazes me how, you know, the game has grown now, you know, and you just see that. I don't know if back in the 60s, you would have seen fans travel into Canton to say, see, Bob Waterfield, the Rams. Okay. I don't think you would have seen fans driving to Canton and coming to Canton to see Bob Waterfield inducted. And you even see that on the parade route. A couple of years, I usually sit downtown now. I used to sit right at the end of our street because we could go there and see the parade, but they changed the parade route. So now I go downtown Canton and see the parade. A couple of years ago, I was sitting with a bunch of Vikings fans because a Viking was being inducted. So it amazes me. The growth is what I think amazes me more than anything.
I can just picture you saying that. You know, probably in the 60s, people were going to the enshrinement ceremonies, probably wearing a sport coat and a tie. Now there's people wear, you know, cheese heads and everything else.
Exactly. I actually remember going to like one of the first parades, and it wasn't, and it hadn't really taken off quite yet. And I remember, like, I don't know why I remember this because I was just a little kid, but I remember the parade came, and then there was these huge gaps in the parade. So you could tell they hadn't quite got it down yet, but, you know, and then they seemed to really start getting their, you know, their act together. But it was something. It was so much more, like I said, so much more small town then. You still had that character of it, you know. Mm-hmm. I remember like one of the early parades, I was looking at some of the old programs, they even had like people that came in from the original cities in Ohio that were part of the original Ohio League that was pre-NFL, you know. So I thought that was just interesting how they, you know, celebrated that early on. So just the growth is amazing.
Well, I mean, that just leads me to an interesting question. I know I think I surprised you with this one a little bit, but you just brought it to my mind. Now, talking about those teams that are now defunct, you live in one of those cities, two of those cities. You're from Canton. You live in Akron now. You have two of the original NFL teams played. Now, are they still celebrated and thought of in those cities?
You know, every once in a while, you'll see an article in the local papers, like the Akron Pros and the Canton Bulldogs, obviously. Mm-hmm. So, you know, every once in a while, you'll see, you know, articles about those. I remember about a couple of years ago, I wanted to try to find in Canton where the original stadium was. I think it was called Lakeside Park. But I remember I was doing some research for one of the, PFRA books. And I was talking to John Kendall, who's the chief archivist at the Hall of Fame. And I said, do you know basically where it's at? And he told me it's in an area which is known as the Myers Lake area in Canada. It used to be an amusement park. But he said that basically there's not like a marker or anything, but he said it's over in that vicinity. I'd love to see them put a marker where the original stadium is. But yeah, so every once in a while you'll see an article about, you know, the history of the Bulldogs and of the and the Akron Pros in the local newspapers. You know, particularly the one thing they've been doing in the Canton Repository, Canton's main paper, is I know John Kendall has been doing a series of like historical articles about pro football, and those appear in the repository from time to time. So I think it's sort of nice because they do celebrate that history.
But you also had the Massillon Tigers in there too, right?
Massillon Tigers, yeah, actually. They were like invited to that first meeting in Canton, but they never survived into the NFL. Yeah. Or as it was called then, the American Professional Football Association, which then would change the name, but yeah, they never made the big show, so to speak. But you know, that Massillon Canton rivalry that started back then has carried on through the high school teams. And it's probably one of the greatest rivalries in all of high school football. I remember hearing a number of years ago, it's the only high school football game that has a line in Vegas. It's pretty amazing. So at any rate, but they take their high school football real serious around here.
Well, we have a couple big teams here in Erie that play Massillon quite a bit, and McKinley, Cathedral Prep, and Erie McDowell. So we're familiar. Yeah. I officiated football for 27 years. So I know I've done some of their games when they've come up here. So we're real familiar with that. And there are always some real good competitive teams from there. That's for sure.
Yep. Number of high schoolers from those two teams have made it to the NFL. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, okay. I got another question here. I know I didn't prepare you for, but how, being from Canton, how about the location, like where Ralph Hayes' Hupmobile showroom was. Is that something that's on, maybe has a marker or something?
Yeah, they have a marker in downtown Canton. It's actually right across from City Hall. And they actually, they've done a couple of things in Canton recently. They've started this group of basically murals or art pieces called the 11. And it's supposed to be 11 significant moments in the history of pro football. And one of them is the birth of the league. And they have basically a sort of a, I guess the best way to put it is sort of an abstract statue right there. And they also, there is, if you look at the side of the building, I believe it's Ohio Power now, that building or the location where that's at. And basically they have a plaque on the side of the building. And it's basically right across the street on what would be Cleveland Avenue in Canton. And it's right across the street from City Hall. So obviously the Hupmobile is not there anymore, but they do have the mark there. And actually the parade goes right through there by there. It's actually, the parade starts just a number of blocks up from that spot. So, and then it comes right by there every year. And then some of the other parts of the 11, which actually is going to be part of our convention. We're going to do a tour of the 11, but they've got one for the first draft. They've got one for Monday Night Football. They're going to have one for the 58 championship game. I'm drawing a blank as to all of them, but it's really impressive what they've done. They had one for the reintegration of the league with the Rams and the Browns with trying to think, Marion Motley and Bill Willis and the two players from the Rams also, Woody Strode, and I can't think of the fourth player right now. I'm drawing a blank, but they have a mural that depicts that. So it's really impressive that they've remembered that. But yeah, you can still go and see where the plaque's at.
Ah, very, very cool. Really good.
So they definitely do have a plaque there. Yep.
Well, now, okay, going back to the Hall of Fame, is there anything that maybe you remember from the Hall of Fame, a display or an exhibit that they had once upon a time that maybe they took down to replace with something else that maybe you wish they would bring back?
Not so much. I just remember how the technology is so much greater. I remember when you first would go there, they would have like these sort of like phone things almost. I'm not to say that the technology has just gone so far in advance, though, but you would basically hit a button and pick up a phone and you could hear like a player talk, you know, and
I remember those.
Yeah. I remember some of those sort of simple things that they had back then. But I just think I'm amazed at how they've continued to grow the exhibits, you know, and what they've added, you know, to the hall over the years. I mean, every time I go, I see something, you know, different that I hadn't seen before. It just really, you know, amazes me. You know, they have, you know, they even celebrate just the fans in an exhibit, you know, they seem to do a really good job of celebrating everything. It's really a great experience for people that have never been to the Hall of Fame. And believe me, there's people in Canton, Ohio that have never been to the Hall of Fame. You know, it's like, you know, it's in your backyard, you know, you say, well, I can always go to the Hall of Fame, you know, but you know, that always amazes me. But with me, and I'm sort of embarrassed to say, we live obviously really close to Cleveland. I've never been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And my wife and I keep saying, we're going to go. And we haven't made it up there yet for that. So, you know, it's sort of that same idea. You know, it's always there. Oh, we'll eventually get there. You know, so I think that's always sort of unique. So,
but you touched on something there. You living so close to Cleveland, I assume you're a Cleveland Browns fan.
Yep. I've been my whole life. Yep.
Okay. Now, so that had to be quite an honor when you saw players, like you talked about seeing Jim Brown get enshrined. Yep. Yep. How about some of the other players maybe you enjoyed seeing getting enshrined? Not only Browns players, but maybe some of the other players that you followed.
Yeah. You know, I obviously, one of my earliest memories, because I really, obviously 64 star, I really remember, you know, pro football, having gone to the Hall of Fame game and all that. So obviously the 64 championship, you know, team, you know, I do remember, you know, Jim Brown getting inducted. I remember, you know, Gene Hickerson, the great, you know, lineman that was, you know, his strong, you know, on the line. I remember Leroy Kelly getting inducted. You know, and then there was other players that were sort of favorite players of mine. You know, Johnny Unitas. I think because I saw Unitas and the Colts, that was like one of my first players that I was impressed with. And I remember as a kid wanting a blue jersey and a helmet, and you didn't get the logo helmet back then. I drew the Colts logo on my helmet. So I remember that. One of the big ones for me being a teenager in the late 60s with Joe Namath. And I remember Namath getting inducted. That was a big deal. I remember seeing him ride in the parade. And, you know, he was, I don't know if somebody threw it at him or what, but, you know, he was known for the pantyhose ad. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, that. I remember those. Yeah.
And he was holding up jokingly a pair of pantyhose that I don't know if somebody had thrown them to him or what, but I remember seeing Joe. Actually, one of the most exciting things I remember was my uncle had somehow gotten tickets for a Bengals-Jets game. And this was around, this was a year after they won the Super Bowl. And I remember going down to Cincinnati to see Namath, and the Bengals then were not playing at the current stadium. They were playing at Old Nippert Stadium, which was the University of Cincinnati. And I remember we got there, and I remember we were real close to the tunnel where the Jets were coming out. And I remember myself and my cousin, we went over there so we could see Namath coming out. And I remember seeing Namath come out. And I remember I was so impressed with the fact that he basically just seemed like with a flick of the wrist was throwing the ball like 60 yards. I mean, I remember that in the warmups. I will never forget that with Namath, you know. And then some of the other favorites was I really was happy to see Kurt Warner when he got inducted, because I've always had an affinity for quarterbacks. I don't know why. Back one of my – not a quarterback, but one of my more recent favorite players to watch has been Larry Fitzgerald. And I know he's going to be a Hall of Famer as soon as he's eligible, but I really enjoy watching Fitzgerald play. But, oh, yeah, the Browns, I mean, God, I could talk about the Browns forever. So, but, yeah, those are the ones that come to mind.
Well, I'm a Steelers fan, of course, being Western Pennsylvania, but sure. You know, I live in a place where we're a mixture of Browns and Steelers and Bills fans, you know, and all of them playing well this year. You know, everybody's was upbeat. So it was kind of a fun time to be in Erie, Pennsylvania with all those fan bases up there. Not so much fun in the playoffs being a Steelers fan, but it was a great season all around. But one of my earliest memories is my father, took me to games. We had trouble getting to Three River Stadium in the 70s because they were just, you know, it was impossible to get tickets when the Steelers were playing so well. But our friends lived in Cleveland and could get us Cleveland Browns tickets, and they were Browns fans. So I got to go to the Coliseum and watch the Steelers Browns game the day when Turkey Jones dumped Bradshaw on his head and, you know, took Bradshaw for most of the season. I was at that game sitting in the upper levels and with the columns up there, and you could miss like 5-10 yards of the field because you're trying to look around these columns. I don't know if you ever sat up there.
Yeah. Municipal Stadium wasn't a great place to watch a football game. It was a baseball stadium, and you were a ways away from the field. Even if you had a 50-yard line, it was bizarre.
Yeah, the thing I remember trying walking up those stairs, they weren't really steps. It was more like a ladder, cement ladders that you were climbing up to get to your seats.
Yeah, so. It wasn't a great stadium. It was really nice when they built a new stadium, because it was like I remember going to baseball games there too. And it just seemed like the last couple of years of the stadium, all you could smell was stale beer and stale hot dogs. It was an experience. It really was. But I do remember going to games at the old stadium. And I remember sitting in the dog pound a couple of times. I was at the game where after obviously Elway and the Broncos had, you know, spoiled our chances in the AFC championship game. I was at the game the year that the Browns finally beat them during the regular season. And it was the game that was sort of infamous in Cleveland, because there were certain vociferous fans in the dog pound that were throwing batteries at Elway. And I remember that the officials decided to flip the field, which, you know, that's unheard of. But I remember they decided to flip the field for his safety. So that was sort of Cleveland fans are crazy fans. I know Steeler fans are crazy fans, too, but some of them get a little bit out of hand sometimes.
Yeah, I think fans everywhere sometimes with those are two definite football towns, you know, Cleveland and Pittsburgh, for being smaller cities in the NFL. They definitely have the fan support, even when the teams are down. So that's something we definitely share in those blue collar towns. Now, another memory I have of Cleveland at their stadium is I got to go, had the opportunity to go to a Cleveland Houston Oilers game, Earl Campbell's first game in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, the big attraction to go see him. And man, what a physical specimen he was in, you know, his early days, you know, with those thighs, they were bigger than most of the other guys' waists, you know, when he came out. I don't know if you ever got a chance to see him play.
Yeah. Yeah. I never got to see, I except for on television, I never got to see Earl Campbell play in person, but I know what you mean. He had those big legs. It was the same thing with Jim Brown. I think that was sort of a thing with those running backs back then. I mean, not to say they don't today, because I mean, obviously they do today, but I think it's always impressive the way those guys are built. They're built to be running backs. I mean, they really are. So
yeah,
I do remember, I remember that famous Monday night game with him when he, I remember they kept playing the Oilers theme song over and over again on Monday Night Football. But
that song still haunts me.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I definitely remember those days. That was quite a rivalry. I mean, the Oilers rivalry with the Browns, I mean, all part of the, you know, the division with the Steelers and the Oilers and the Browns. You know, there was a time there where it basically seemed to come down to those three teams, you know, during that decade with, you know, with Sipe, you know, with the Browns and the Cardiac Kids. And, you know, there was some great battles back then.
Yeah, I read it since you mentioned the AFC Central. I read something just a couple weeks ago, and it never really dawned on me because, you know, the Steelers and the Browns and the Colts were the three teams that shifted over from the NFL when the AFL merged. They shifted into the AFC, I should say, to balance things out a little bit. But in the AFC Central, they are the only division that didn't have an original AFL team in it. Which I didn't realize that until I sat there and thought about it.
That's interesting. I guess
Bengals were AFL, but they were like 1968, you know, sort of near the end of the AFL.
Yeah. Yep. They were an expansion team. Yeah. I actually, from the same uncle, I want to say that I think the reason was, is I think the radio station that he worked with, because we have a lot of people in our family that are involved in local media and stuff like that, but he had worked for a radio station in Akron. And I think they had some tie-in with the Bengals because I was going through some old boxes in my basement. I found I had the original Cincinnati Bengals schedule, which I kept. And I put it in with my other memorabilia, but I remember that because I remember they went 3-11 the first year, and then Paul Brown seemed to turn them around like in no time. I think they made the playoffs the third season. He just did an amazing job with them. But yeah, I remember you're right. The Bengals were not one of the original AFL teams. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, just the little tidbit we throw in there. Well, one of the reasons that we brought you on is we want to talk about the PFRA a little bit more. And I know you're going to be talking, this is airing on the, 2 days before you're going to be airing on the Football History Dude with Arnie Chapman. So we don't want to sort of segue you into that. You're going to be talking a lot more about the PFRA, but the convention is coming up. What, what can people expect to go to a convention?
Yeah, we do our conventions every other year. In recent years, we were in Canton, I believe in 2010, 2012, we were in New York. In 14, we were in Cleveland. 16, we were in Green Bay. And in 18, we were in Buffalo. That's our last convention. Last year, we were supposed to be 2020. It was supposed to be in Canton, but with COVID, we had to postpone. So we are having our 2021 convention now, 3 years between the conventions, and it's going to still be in Canton. It'll be the weekend of June 24th through the 27th of this year. So we're doing a lot of planning. Basically, what our conventions are is the two main days of the convention are actually Friday and Saturday. We do a Friday evening session, and we do an all-day Saturday session. And what we do is we have normally members come in, and we have them speak on certain topics. The theme from last year, and we've continued it into this year, was the 100th anniversary of the NFL. So we're basically... we're doing also some add-on activities. I'll backtrack a little bit. On Thursday, for people that come into town early, we're doing a tour of the Paul Brown Museum. Maslin has a museum, the Maslin Museum. And Maslin's only 7-8 miles to the west of Canton. And they started a Paul Brown Museum as part of their Maslin Museum, which is a larger museum, and the Paul Brown Museum is part of that larger museum. But we're going to do a tour of the Paul Brown Museum. And then where their high school stadium is Paul Brown Tiger Stadium. They have Paul Brown statue right outside the stadium, and they also have an Ohio historical marker there because of Paul Brown. Paul Brown actually started his coaching career in Massillon. He was Massillon High School coach from 1932 to 1940. And won, I believe, I can't remember. He went undefeated, I know, his last three seasons there. But he won a number of state championships while he was there. And most people say his 1940 team, which had a number of players on it that eventually played for the Browns, Lynn Houston, Horace Gillum, and Tommy James. They say that was one of the greatest high school football teams in the history of the state of Ohio. They actually scrimmaged a couple of local college teams and beat them badly. That's how good they were. So,
wow.
So we're going to visit the sort of do a little segue over to Massillon for people that are coming in early. And then on Friday, we're having a luncheon at Bender's Tavern in downtown Canton, which is one of the oldest restaurants in Canton. And apparently back in the day, it was one of Jim Thorpe's favorite haunts. So they have a football background. So we're going to have a luncheon there. And then after that, we're going to do the tour of the 11 that I explained to you earlier. And another new thing that they've started in downtown Canton is Centennial Plaza, which is a plaza that's right in the middle of downtown area, which is dedicated to football. And you can see the names, I believe, of everybody that's ever played in the NFL there. And they have a video screen and stuff. I have not had a chance to tour it yet, so I really can't give any more detail, but it's something that just opened earlier this year. So that we're going to take a tour of Centennial Plaza, and then we have our evening session, and we're having two panel discussions that night, one on the pre-NFL history of pro football and one on the founding of the league and also the original teams. On Saturday, we go all day. We always start with our business meeting. And then we're having John Maximuk, who just wrote the book Pioneer Coaches of the NFL. He's going to speak in the morning about Guy Chamberlain, one of the original coaches of the Canton Bulldogs that he has talked about in his book. So he's going to give that talk. I'm working on a second speaker for the morning. I haven't confirmed yet. But just this weekend, actually just this morning, we always try to do a former NFL player panel. In the past, we've had Dick Shafrath and Jim Houston, who played on the 64 Browns championship team.
Wow.
We had Dave Robinson also when we were in Cleveland last time, because Packers Hall of Famer, Lombardi Packers, he lives in the area. And he came in and spoke at our convention in Cleveland. When we were in Buffalo, we had Thurman Thomas come in and speak, Hall of Famer for the Bills. And we also had two of the 60s era Bills, the AFL Bills. We had Ed Rutkowski, and we also had Booker Edgerson come in. So I just over the weekend and today confirmed, and this is the first time anybody is hearing this because it hasn't even made our website yet, because I haven't had a chance to get it on the website yet. We confirmed two players that are going to be coming in and speaking, Roger Duffy, who played for the Jets and the Steelers from 1990 to 2001. He's offensive lineman. And also Bob Vogel, who was also an offensive tackle, and he played for the Colts back from 63 to 72. And he's a five-time Pro Bowler. He played for Coach Shula and then also Don McCafferty. And he played in Super Bowl III and in Super Bowl V. And actually, they both have an interesting background, not only in the pros and some of the coaches that they played for, because obviously Vogel played for Shula. But in looking at the history on Roger Duffy, he played a season with for Pete Carroll. He played a season for Bill Parcells, and then he also played for Bill Cowher. Interesting enough, he's a Penn State grad, so he played for Petunia of Penn State. And Bob Vogel is an OSU grad, so he played for Woody Hayes at OSU. So they – between the two of them, they've sort of played for a Mount Rushmore of coaches.
I guess so.
Yeah. So they're going to be two of our NFL former player panels on Saturday afternoon. And then on Sunday, it's another add-on activity. And we've done this before, and it was really well received. We get a behind-the-scenes tour of the archives at the Hall of Fame, the Research Center and the archives. And John Kendall, I mentioned earlier, the archivist, he's going to do that for anybody that's sticking around for Sunday. And then also on Saturday, we're going to get a tour of the Hall of Fame too, for any, because that's part of the admission fee.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
Yeah, so it's a very full weekend. If you love football, it's definitely for you. So it's a great weekend for people that love pro football.
Now, if you want to give some ways that people are interested in joining the PFRA, because I'm sure it's discounted for members to go in as opposed to non-members. How would somebody join the PFRA?
Yeah, you can join the PFRA on our website at profootballresearchers.org. You can become a member. It's $35 for people who live in the domestic United States, $40 for Canadian, and 50 for international members. And that includes your full membership. You get six copies come out a year of our magazine, The Coffin Corner. Those come out every other month. If you're a member, you know what I'm talking about with the mm-hmm. Coffin Corner. It's a great magazine with, you know, articles about pro football history. Also, you get access to our members only section, which has a lot of great, you know, research that's been done. And then you do get a discount because members get into the convention for $50. Also, their spouses for $50, but non-members is $100. So yeah, so you do. There's definitely a savings, and you know, part of the convention too. That fee, you know, pays for your admission to the convention. We have meals both days, and you know, it's really a great deal for $50. The organization supplements that a little bit because it does cost us more than that to put it on. But, you know, we want to make it affordable for our membership.
Hey, folks, here's a hint. If you want to go to the convention and you're not a member, it's cheaper if you join the PFRA first and then do it. You'll save a couple bucks there, right?
You are definitely right. Yeah, you do save a couple bucks. So yeah, become a member first and then come to the convention. Yep, most definitely.
Yeah, you heard it here first. Now, I want to leave you with this. You know, you're yeah. being a Browns fan, I'm a Steelers fan. Now, you do realize this year, since the Hall of Fame enshrinement is going to be combining 2 years of enshrinees getting put in, there are five different Steelers going in this year, or Steelers yes. connections. I did.
Yes. You're correct.
So you might not see as many cheeseheads and guys with Vikings helmets, but there might be a lot of black and gold this year. That's all I'm saying.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah. That's my husband's boss at the radio station is a huge Steeler fan. She was real excited when she saw so many people that were going to be inducted this year. So yeah. Big thing for the Steeler fans, most definitely.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're a Steelers fan and you're ever going to go to the enshrinement, this is the year to go.
It is.
As long as we can with COVID, you know, hopefully.
Yeah, most definitely.
Now, is there any precautions that going to the convention?
We're taking all COVID restrictions. The Hall of Fame is also for tours and everything else. So, we're taking all those restrictions. Actually, we're limited right now. We're hoping we can get more in there. We're limited to 48 right now. We're going to have the convention in the Hall of or the Gold Jacket Lounge at the Hall of Fame. Right now, we're limited to 48. And it's I must say, it's filling up quickly. So I'm really pleased with that. But we're hoping... Actually, I had a call in today to my contact over there to see if there's been any changes, because every week it seems like, you know, things open up a little bit more. But yeah, we're doing well in that regard too. Yeah, all COVID restrictions and protocols are being followed.
Okay,
so it's a very safe environment.
That's good. That way, anybody that's having any doubts, that way they feel self-assured to go there safely. So we all appreciate that. Now, I guess one last thing I wanted to touch upon, because I know that you have a lot to do with the PFRA's book publications on team books. And I know you're going to be talking quite a bit about the Packers, 66 Packers and 58 Colts and the 51 Rams with Arnie in a couple of days. So we won't spoil those for you. But the 64 Bills, you said that you're in the process of working on. What's all involved with putting together a book like that?
Yeah, we started the book series, as you said, with the 66 Packers, which came out in 2016, just in time for the convention when we were in Green Bay. This latest book we're doing is going to be on the 64 Bills. We actually just started the process. I basically asked for basically the whole membership, anybody that's interested in contributing. I get a list of everybody that's interested in contributing either as helping with editing or helping write an article for the book. And I get a list of everybody. Then I send out a list of everybody we're going to cover. We cover all the players. We cover all the coaches. We do game summaries. We do the championship games that they played in. We do the draft, how the team was built. We do special topics for each team. So I put together that whole list. We ask everybody to give their preferences. I then assign the topics, give a schedule. And, you know, we basically go through drafts until we finally edit the book. But it's a large undertaking, but we've had a really good reception for these. And the Bills will be the first AFL team from the old AFL that we've covered, because we've covered three NFL teams, but we're covering the 64 team because they won the 64 AFL championship. So we're covering them. We're really excited about it. But we have just started the process. I'm just getting preferences from everybody right now.
Oh, very interesting. All right. And I guess before I let you go, is there any social media that maybe the PFRA or your own personal that you'd like to share with us so people can follow the organization or yourself?
I know that we are on, I am really bad about social media. We do have a Facebook page, and we do, I believe, also have things on Twitter. So you can follow us on both Facebook and on Twitter.
If you go on Twitter and just put the @ and start putting PFRA and it comes up with that Pro Football History or something like that. You start entering PFRA, it does come up.
So we're on both. So we do get a lot of followers through Facebook. So and a lot of things on there also.
Well, George, we really appreciate you coming on the Pigpen today and helping us learn a little bit more about football history and some of the great things that happened at the Hall of Fame in the area of Canton. And hopefully we get a lot of our listeners that show up there to go to the convention and maybe even take in an enshrinement too later in the summer. And I appreciate you coming on, and you're always welcome to come on and spread the message of football history.
Well, thank you so much. I really, really enjoyed this. This was a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
The 2021 Professional Football Researchers Association Convention will be held at the Gold Jacket Lounge at the Pro Football Hall of Fame during the final weekend of June. Convention speakers will celebrate the 100th anniversary of the founding of the NFL. The fee for the convention is $50 for members and $100 for non-members. The fee includes admission to the convention and Pro Football Hall of Fame, meals on Friday evening and Saturday afternoon, and free parking. All convention activities are subject to COVID-19 protocols. For more details, click on the 2021 PFRA convention link at profootballresearchers.org.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. A special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network, and we're able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know that. Can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear.
starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.